Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be taking a deep dive into the Open Forest Protocol. It's a company that's currently raising funds on Republic. We're going to be discussing their fundraising round and we're going to be discussing what they're doing on the ground. Open Forest Protocol is on a mission to boost integrity in the carbon credit market. It's boosting transparency. We're going to be discussing how it's doing that today. And we're very kindly joined today by Fred Fournier, who is the CEO, and Aureline Grange, who is the CCO. Fred and Aureline, very much welcoming you to the podcast today.
Thank you, Jonathan. Very glad to be there.
Thank you, John. Looking forward to the discussion.
Really interesting what you guys are doing and really looking forward to this conversation, as well as discussing the current crowdfunding round on Republic. I will just make a note, if anybody wants to find out more as they're listening to this, do check out the notes to the podcast because there'll be a link through to the page on Republic where you'll be able to get more information. So let's get started, Fred and Aureline. I think a place that would be most suitable to start would be a background to your founding story and a bit of background to your team as well as introducing the two of you.
So we are both from a scientific background. We've been doing consulting, environmental consulting more precisely before. And both of us, we co-founded a Swiss NGO called On a Mission, which is supporting sustainable reforestation projects worldwide. And we did that about close to 10 years back now. And we soon realized that with this activity, we found a lot of great, amazing projects on the ground that were not able to really measure, report adequately to us, or we were not super happy with what we were getting from them. And on the other side, we also found out that all those projects were really relying on philanthropic donations and had no access whatsoever to the carbon markets. And so we deep dive into that to understand why it was the case. And we understood that, you know, there were facing a lot of issues, you know, on technical side, on the financial side, to do that adequately. And so basically, we have built now Open Forest Protocol as a fully digital carbon standard and MRV platform embedded into it to address those two main issues I was mentioning before. So to make the carbon market for those type of projects completely open and accessible. And so that's where we come from. And in 2020, we were looking at, you know, basically building OFP, but we didn't have the exact idea on how to do it. And that's where we met Michael Kelly, who is an American guy working in the blockchain technology space, who was also working with professors in the US on the sustainability aspect of also reforestation and conservation. And we linked together and the three of us basically co-funded Open Forest Protocol. And as of today, so about 5 years later, now we roughly 13 employees in the company with, you know, of course, different backgrounds: environmental science, blockchain engineering, sales, and yeah, that's where we are today. And we've been recognized by the World Economic Forum as a trillion tree top innovator. So that's a bit of the background on who we are.
You mentioned there issues within transparency in the carbon market. And I think that's something I'd like to delve into in a little bit more detail now, because I think that's something that investors would be particularly interested in hearing about. So what are the key problems that you're setting out to solve at Open Forest Protocol? And why is it so important to the carbon markets that you're setting out to solve these issues?
So just to give you the big picture, like over the next 10 years, we need to restore over like a huge amount of land, 1 billion hectares, if we want to meet like all the global climate and land degradation goals. But right now, the problem is, as Fred was saying, that the finance is not reaching the projects that can really do the work on the ground. So what you have is like very large scale projects that are able to be financed by institutional investors, and these can kickstart, even if they take a long, long time to get started. But all the like smaller and medium scale projects that have a massive potential for scale cannot be funded in the right way and in the most efficient way for the moment. And I would say like the reason behind this is, as Fred was saying, there's really like a lack of transparency. And so the current carbon market really relies on PDF reports. You also have to fly in consultants to do the verification of the data collection on the ground. And so it's very slow, it's expensive, and it's opaque. And so if you're not like an expert in these projects, it's very difficult to understand the data that's behind. And it's difficult to understand like where the credits come from and what data was used to issue these credits. And so this has led to a little bit of a like buyer trust for these credits. And this is why you now have also companies that are like rating agencies, rating carbon projects and rating carbon credits to provide more insights to the buyers. And so, as I was saying, one of the major problem is the exclusivity of the carbon market. So we have extremely high costs for verification. And so all the smaller project size cannot access and cannot pay these fees. And so there are around like 400 million hectares of restorable land that we could restore, but are currently unbankable and cannot be financed. And so this is where really OFP comes in. So we've digitized the entire, what we call MRV, but it stands for monitoring, reporting, and verification. And we've removed intermediaries to make sure that this process is accessible to projects of any size all over the world, that it's affordable, that there are no like huge upfront costs for these projects, and also that it's extremely transparent. And this is mostly for the buyers. And so by transparency, what we mean is that you can see on OFP all the project data. So if you imagine a reforestation project, for instance, you would be able to see, okay, from day one, this is what is happening on the ground with this project. You have pictures of the trees that are growing over time, and this data is uploaded every year. And so in 20 years from now, if you had bought credits from this project, you would be able to see, okay, this is how the project that I invested in or that I bought credit from evolved over time. And this transparency is really key if we want high integrity projects and also an interesting price for the credits.
So in essence, you're really opening up the carbon credit market for projects that may not have coverage before. So that's a really interesting point. And thank you very much for making that so comprehensively. I've got a question now about where you sit within the wider market, because you mentioned there ratings agencies covering certain projects. It would be good if you could give us a flavour as to where Open Forest Protocol sits within the wider market, the ecosystem, and what the landscape looks like in terms of, you know, competitors. And I think maybe if you could bring in the types of people that you're dealing with as well, the types of projects, if you could add some colour there as well, that'd be fantastic, please.
I would say in the carbon market, you have like a few key layers and a few like key players. So you first have the project developers. So these are companies that have projects for nature restoration. And it can be very broad. It can be like wetlands, it can be forest restoration, it could be forest protection or mangroves restoration and protection. Like so very broad. There are very different kinds of nature restoration that are possible. Then you have standard and registries. And so these are companies, organizations that really define the rules and issue the credits for these projects. And so you have legacy players such as Verra or Gold Standard that you may know. There's also Plan Vivo that is also focused a little more on the smaller scale projects. As I was saying, really here to make sure that the projects are done in the right way, that they are verified, and then that this leads to the issuance of some credits that they can sell to, and I will talk about it, but buyers. Then you also have, I would say, the what we call MRV and data providers. So these are companies and tools that are used by the project developers to collect data on the ground or to add additional insights. So for instance, it could be remote sensing data using satellites. It could also be AI data providers that run some models to provide additional insights on the projects. And then the fourth player is really like the marketplace and the brokers and the buyers. So these, they connect the project developers that have credits to sell with the buyers for these credits. And as I was saying, there's also like the fifth player, I would say, that are the rating agencies. And these have evolved. And I think where the reason why they're here is because we had this lack of transparency on the projects and that buyers needed a confirmation of like the quality of the projects they were buying credits in or purchasing or investing. Basically. So I'd say like these are the five key players of the nature-based carbon markets. And on our side, we stand in the middle. So we are, as Fred was saying, a digital standard, but we also provide the digital MRV infrastructure layer, which is not normally very common for standards. But for us, this is super important because it enables us to also standardize the way that data is collected on the ground. And it also makes it easier for validators to understand the like general infrastructure of the data that they need to verify. And so on our side, this fully digital standard is really designed for very high integrity forest and agroforestry projects for the moment. And we have ex post issuance, and this is super important for us. So this means that all the credits that are issued on OFP, they're only issued after the impact is measured and verified. So once this impact is checked, is approved, this is only when that you have the credits that are issued and that are received by the projects and can then be sold. Our platform also combines all the measurement, reporting, and verification tools. And so this is like typically we provide the tools for the ground data collection. So we have a mobile app that is used by the project developers to collect the data on the ground, measure the trees, take photos. All this is what we call geofence. So the data can only be collected in the project area. Otherwise, the app doesn't work. And then we have this very unique set of more than 40 validators that are independent validators that simultaneously can check the data. And this is very different also from other standards where normally you just have one validator that is usually paid by the project developer. And so on our side, we kind of removed this bias and said, okay, well, the data that's coming from the ground will be reviewed by multiple entities simultaneously with different skill sets. They're all skilled in forest ecosystems for the moment, but they have, for instance, also remote sensing skills and so on. So we have this like wide skill set of validators that thoroughly evaluate the data that's coming on the ground from the project. And then also one thing that differentiates us from the what is done in the industry is that we use the blockchain infrastructure. So you can see it as just like a very transparent and public database where all the data that's collected on the ground is stored here and it cannot be changed. So when the project uploads data from the ground, on this blockchain, it's here forever. And in 20 years from now, you can go back in the past and see, okay, this is really what was uploaded from the ground 20 years ago. And so I would say you can really think of us as the kind of operating system for nature restoration. So we're not project developers and we're not really a marketplace, but we do provide the infrastructure for everyone else, for project developers, for governments, for experts, verification experts, and also in the future, institutional and corporate buyers of high quality credits to really come in and join us and make this infrastructure very comprehensive and inclusive. You were also mentioning the competitors. So of course, like we have the standards and legacy registries such as Vera, Gold Standard, Plan Vivo. As I was saying, like we provide a little more than these standard, and we are also like more specialized for the moment in forest restoration. Of course, our infrastructure is built to accommodate what we call new verticals. So typically we're currently also working for mangrove restoration verticals and biodiversity credits. So we can expand, but for the moment, yeah, we're focused on forest restoration.
That was a really comprehensive insight into your platform and your technology. I think a question that investors would have, and this is the question that I also have as well, is a little bit more understanding about the proposition and maybe a little bit more about the business model in terms of, you know, revenue generation. You very clearly outlined, you know, what you're doing on the ground and how the system works. But where does the revenue generation come in for Open Forest Protocol? I think if you could add a little bit more detail there, that would be great, just to get a really clear picture of how this all comes together in terms of revenue generation and then scalability into the future as well.
Yeah, to speak about the business model, so we have basically two things. The core business model is that we take a small fee on every carbon credit generated, and that's really the core business model of the whole platform, and that revenue will scale with the number of projects on the platform, the size of projects, but also time for which the trees are going to grow, and it means that this revenue is going to kick in and basically provoke a very strong growth with years to come. The other business model we have is that we'll offer very soon, beginning of next year, kind of the same MRV services we have in the standard, but outside of the standard as a SaaS solution, because we've been asked by many players in the market that are already using other standards or doing conservation work or, you know, interacting with nature, that they need a tool to do this MRV, monitoring, reporting, and verification, but they don't necessarily need the standard we are proposing. So we are also offering this as a SaaS solution. And there, of course, the business model with a SaaS solution is very much, you know, a monthly or annual fee. And it's slightly faster recurring revenue than the primer core business model. On the scale, and I think that's quite important, it relates to the business model. I think, as Odin really mentioned it well, we are really solving a painful, well-documented bottleneck. And this is crucial to understand that we are really addressing a choke point in scaling high-quality carbon markets and nature-based solutions. And this comes also with some tractions at doing this. We've been doing this for now more than, you know, 4 years, and we've been actively opening the solution for projects for the last two and a half years. So we have already 300 projects registered across 30 countries. We have issued carbon credits for many of those projects. We have 90 plus product developers. And that is basically the market validation we need for the scale, because with the system we have built, the scale is much easier when you think about, you know, a digital technological solution rather than a consulting fee-based approach on scaling things. And so the consequence of all of that is that there's a strong data and network effect on the business model, where every new project, every hectare, every data point actually strengthens the accuracy of the model and the attractiveness of credits.
Really interesting to hear from feedback that you've had and requests that you're actually going to be launching a SaaS model early next year. So that's really exciting. We're going to move on to the crowdfunding. Of course, you're on Republic at this point in time. And as I said at the beginning, do check out the notes to this podcast if anybody would like to know more about that. First question here about the crowdfunding round. Why are you raising capital at this stage in time?
I think we see OFP right now at an inflection point. As Fred was saying, like, we've built the core infrastructure. So we have the mobile apps, we have the project operator dashboard, the validator dashboard, and we also have what we call the Atlas, is where you can see all the data from the project that comes from the ground. And so with these hundreds of projects that we have onboarded in more than 30 countries, we've also issued the first digital credits on OFP beginning of last year. So it's really proven that fully digital, high integrity insurance is feasible. And we've done this with pre-seed capital from institutional investors. So we had angel, venture capitalists, but also foundations that helped us reach this stage. But right now, the bottleneck is no longer like, can we build the system that we envisioned and imagined? But it's more like, okay, how fast can we scale it? And so that's why we're raising capital right now. So we are raising really to scale from hundreds of projects to thousands of forest restoration projects worldwide, so that OFP can really become the default infrastructure for these like community-led, small, mid-sized restoration efforts and projects. As Fred was saying, like, it's also to continue like improving all our ground digital monitoring tools, with also this SaaS MRV tool that will be released like super soon in the next few months. And as I was saying earlier, we also are currently working on expanding into what we call verticals. So this means that we can onboard more project types on OFP. So rather than just being able to onboard forest restoration projects, we're also looking into developing a mangrove vertical for mangrove restoration, and also looking at biodiversity monitoring and biodiversity credits, so that we can protect also more critical ecosystems. And so what we've done up until now is we haven't presented this when we were talking about the team, but our team is like really remote. We have people in South America, in Africa, and we're present also where our clients are. And so typically in Brazil, in Kenya, we have a presence, and we're seeing also like strong traction in Ghana and in other countries like Colombia. So we want to deepen also our presence in these key countries where we have a significant scale potential in terms of like size of projects and amounts of projects. And so some part also of this funding will help us strengthen our team to really support this growth for like global scale system for forest and nature restoration. And so I think if you think about this round, it really gives us the funds and the resources to turn a validated model that has been proven and to really like the backbone of high integrity nature credits, like for a global scale. So that's the next step for us. It's really like reaching this global scale with OFB.
Sounds like the funds are going to be deployed to pursue a truly global expansion strategy. And it's really interesting to hear the different countries and different opportunities that you have around the world. A question here again on crowdfunding. What's the rationale for choosing crowdfunding as a funding option? Of course, you know that there's VC options, various different options out there for companies such as yourself. Why did you see crowdfunding as such an important choice for your overall strategy?
I have multiple answers, but the first answer is really that it fits our mission. We've basically started developing Open Forest Protocol as an kind of an open system. It's truly open on, you know, looking at data, on who can join us. Of course, there are, you know, rules and guidelines and all of those things that you need for making sure the system functions. But really the logic of building something with everyone involved was really core to the mission. And so when we think about democratizing climate finance, this actually fits really well what, you know, Republic or other crowdfunding platform could be doing. And basically it makes sense for us that we also democratize access to our own equity and not just keep it for VCs or family offices or some of our angel network, but really to make it, I wouldn't say a movement because that's a bit ambitious, but start something that is it's more coming from the crowd. Because if you look at the project side of things, now that we have, you know, 300 projects and we see more and more coming, this is kind of a crowd movement. On the validator side, it's a bit the same thing. We have 40 validators and we're seeing more and more. And so it also makes sense that on the investor side, we have the same logic and the same approach. And the second point, of course, is that Republic Europe is, from our perspective, maybe someone has a different opinion, but is the Europe's leading regulated equity and crowdfunding platform. So I think with such a long track record, we are, you know, very confident on raising with them rather with maybe another more local platform.
Yes, indeed. I mean, Republic, formerly Cedars here in the UK, one of the leaders out there. I think there's two up there, but certainly a wide reach and a very deep investor base there, Fred. So yeah, very good point. A question investors always have. Now, this is a question that I know you can't answer with any form of certainty because you don't know what's going to happen and there's no guarantees. But it's always good to get an interest into your insight of what you think a potential exit routes could be or potential liquidity events in the future for investors.
Yes. So, of course, those things are to be looked into the future. And of course, our position today might evolve. But I think for us, the first ambition, and to be very clear on that, is that we really want to grow a global system that works well. And of course, that's really the ambition. What that means, if we reach this, and hopefully we will, in, you know, an exit or an acquisition or even an IPO, but that's not really what we're looking at this moment, is I think there are a few options. I think the first option that is quite interesting is secondary trading on Republic, because this is kind of a unique model that investors will be able to use. The second is a strategic acquisition, because, you know, as carbon market gets mature, we already see, you know, some consolidation going on now. And this is not going to stop, of course, because of the market size expanding and because of some actors needing to, of course, work with others to make it more efficient. So there will be consolidation between standard and registries, between climate data, MRV companies, exchanges, brokers. That's totally an option. And of course, the third option could be, you know, buybacks, where there might be opportunities for early shareholders to sell to later stage investors, either on Republic or outside of Republic. They are directly in the cap table. So those are basically the three options. And of course, if we want to look further into the future, why not an IPO? I don't think it's really super relevant for a system like us, but, you know, it's still possible.
Certainly an option that shouldn't be ruled out. So to wrap things up now, I'd like to look at the outlook, the market, and really get your perspective on what's happening out there, how you see things developing over the next 3 to 5 years, and where Open Forest Protocol fits into that growth story.
So I think I can give my vision here. So for me, and we've seen this in the past like 2 years, I think the next 3 to 5 years will probably be a little bit noisy in the carbon market, as it has been in the past years, but it will also be like super interesting. On the demand side, so on the demand for carbon credits, In the early like 20s, the carbon market was really a rough market of $2 billion. And it's been projected to grow over like tens to $100 billion by 2030 to 2050. And so this depends on the scenario, but you have like McKinsey, you have a few banks also that put out research on the growth of the carbon markets. So there's really like a growth path that has been laid out by these different organizations. So I think we'll see this strengthen over the next 3 to 5 years, especially also as like we have corporate net zero commitments and we have regulations like CSRD, TNFD, and we also have like a rising pressure on all the nature related risks that are driving demand for really like high quality and well-documented carbon credits, and not just like generic credits that could have been used in the past and it was okay in the past. But right now we see really a switch from generic credits to high quality data-backed credits, and credits also with co-benefits. So when we speak about co-benefits, it's also like benefits for biodiversity, for local communities. So not just like a huge project, but more like projects that involve the communities and so on. So this is what we've seen over the past 5 years, and kind of this switch from very large scale projects with low co-benefits to like a focused on more, okay, restoration efforts with co-benefits, with high quality, high integrity credits that also sell at a premium. But these companies are kind of focusing on this route right now. And so if we think on the supply side, so on the project side, as I was saying, like in the introduction, we really need to restore a significant amount of land by 2030 and after. And we also have a significant amount of land that is really available for restoration. So it's been estimated that roughly like 2 billion hectares of degraded land could be restored and are suitable for restoration. So we have like the land available for restoration, and we just need systems to funnel the funding and the finance and the capital to projects on the ground. And I would say also to scalable projects on the ground. And this is what OFP unlocks. It's really the scale for restoration. And so my view really is that the market will probably consolidate. And as Fred was saying, around like higher integrity standards with like very strong measurement reporting and verification, as well as governance. As I was saying just before, like we'll see also premium price for high quality credits, and especially nature-based removal credits that have co-benefits. And I think, and this we've been discussing also, and Fred was involved in a lot of discussions with banks, but we see that the carbon markets will very probably integrate more tightly with mainstream finance. We've been talking with banks that are developing also platforms to make sure that the carbon credits become really like a real asset class and not just like an ESG afterthought. So I think this will happen also in the next like 3 to 5 years. And so if we think about Open Forest Protocol, so we're positioned right at the intersection. So we provide really a digital backbone that is available and ready for high integrity nature credits. And we make these kinds of credits possible at scale with small, medium-sized projects for nature restoration for the moment. And I think like we're right about where the market is going. So on the side of high integrity credits and where scale is massively needed. And so we're really positioned at the right point in time. And if we can, I would say, jump on the train of the scale of the carbon market, I think we'll be like in a very good position in the next like 3 to 5 years with a system that has scaled with thousands of projects onboarded on our platform, significant amount of credits that have been issued, and buyers are also interested by these like highly data-backed carbon credits with like social co-benefits. So this is my vision of the market, yeah, and where we stand in this market.
As well as making fantastic case for the Open Forest Protocol as a company, Aurelien, really good message there in terms of the impact that you're going to have, and that's really unlocking the scale for nature restoration. So I think that's a really key point to take away from this conversation. So thank you very much. Just as a final note to listeners, if you would like to know more about the Open Forest Protocol and their crowdfunding round, do check out the notes to this podcast, because there'll be a link through to their page on Republic. Fred and Aurelien, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you,
John. Thank you to you. Thanks, John.
And thank you very much to everyone for listening.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember all investment involves risk.